Welcome to the Condo on the Moon podcast, the most controversial podcast on God's green earth, at least in comparison to the WWE and Chris Jericho live. We are very controversial. We have a Swiss millennial on our show, for God's sakes. He is Chris Walder.
Controversy creates cash, and that's coming from the poorest man on the planet.
Eric Bischoff? You think he's the poorest man on the planet?
No, that's coming from me.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say, he's making that Billy Bob beer or whatever. I think he's doing all right.
He's getting that beer money.
Yeah, well, Austin's trying to get into that, too.
Smart man.
Yeah, he's not working with the WWE, though.
No, he's not.
Chris Jericho is, though.
Yay!
Should we just jump right into that? I know we had Extreme Rules, and we had King of the Ring, which didn't exist a week ago when we talked. It's back, and we already have a new king. But should we jump right into the Jericho stuff? Because I feel, at least I know I have a lot to say about it.
Yeah, I want to hear you rant, because I didn't actually watch it, so I'm interested to hear what actually went down. So take it away, James.
Okay, so let's put it this way. We had John Cena on, and most people of sound mind thought that was a very candy-coated, very friendly interview. That said, the interview with Stephanie McMahon took it to a whole new level. There was so much ass-kissing in this interview, I believe that Paul Levesque should want to kill Chris Jericho at this point, because literally there was a man kissing his wife's ass for an hour, and I felt it was just the most boring pile of dribble that I've ever seen. Quite honestly, I mean, if you wanted fun, like, oh, there's Chris Jericho and Stephanie reminiscing about old times, it was great, but the controversial, as the WWE advertises it, Chris Jericho Live was anything but.
What was the, like, hardest-hitting question he asked? Can you think of one?
At the very end, they talked about AJ Lee's tweets about the whole give the Divas a Chance thing, and when she ripped on her about, was it Patricia Arquette that Stephanie was praising? They talked about that. Obviously, Jericho fully on the side of Stephanie. It was garbage. And, I mean, Stephanie, of course, did not throw AJ under the bus, because obviously we have lawsuits going on and all of that, and actually praised AJ for standing up for herself. But yeah, she's not with the company, so you figure that out. Anyway, that was about as controversial as it got. I tell you one thing, though. I do have something in common with Stephanie McMahon I was very excited about.
You're not in love with Triple H, are you?
No, but when Stephanie was a youngster, she had a crush on Bo Duke, and I loved the Dukes of Hazzard as a kid, so I was very thrilled to know this.
I'm a millennial, so I don't get that reference. That's the one with the car horn that's, do you know the car? You'd have to say it for me.
The General Lee, which was very racially offensive in 2015, because it had the Confederate flag on top.
Yes.
And there were a bunch of moonshiners who were actually the good guys in the show, and you had the evil Boss Hog who ran the town, and all the cops trying to always catch the Duke boys. It was fun. Daisy Duke was on there. Daisy Duke shorts, you're aware of those.
Yes, I am.
They came from Daisy Duke on that show.
Good stuff.
So there you go. Anyway, so I learned that. The only other interesting thing, I guess, that Stephanie had to offer was they talked about the Divas. Obviously, she's behind pushing the Divas. And, of course, the Ronda Rousey stuff came out. And they talked about that, and Stephanie's answer to if her and Ronda will ever get in a ring together, never say never. They did bring up the fact Dana White said never.
Yeah.
But I guess that's all up in the air and in limbo. But Stephanie hugely put over Ronda in that interview, which makes me think we're not done with that by a long shot.
Well, we still think she'll be at WrestleMania, just not as a wrestler, right?
I think she's a special guest referee or she's in a corner. I think that's the ultimate compromise they come to. And when you look, we're not going to get deep into it, but Ronda has even more leverage over the UFC this week than she did last week when you consider all the bumbling of Jon Jones and all the mishaps of him getting into a car accident, finding drugs in his car, hitting a pregnant woman, and being stripped of his title. Ronda Rousey, if there was a debate, the debate is over. She is the number one star in UFC, and I think she can pretty much do whatever she wants with that company.
Yeah, great point, man. You done screwed up, Jones. You had the top of the world, you had the belt, and now Rousey is definitely number one, and hopefully she uses that, because I think she genuinely wants to be at WrestleMania.
I think, you know, Dana White can say whatever he wants. I really think if Ronda wants to push this issue, she will get what she wants at the end of the day. I don't think she'll get a match. I never did think she'd get a match, though, and I don't think she necessarily wanted a match. But I do think she wants in, and she wants some conclusion to what she started. I don't listen to it on a regular basis, but I recommend go listen to the Roddy Piper podcast with Ronda Rousey. If you listen to Ronda Rousey after that podcast and you don't think she's coming back to WWE, I don't know what to tell you, because she was jacked about that whole experience at WrestleMania.
Still, though, if the Rousey discussion and the Give Divas a Chance movement was the biggest talking points of the Stephanie interview, I am totally glad that I missed out on it.
Oh, no, it was just an hour wasted of time. It really was. I mean, a lot of stuff that had already been covered, too. Like, there was a lot of talk about, you know, how her and Paul's relationship affected them. That's been talked about to death in WWE. Go watch Triple H's DVD.
Yeah.
Stephanie said nothing different that she didn't say in Thy Kingdom Come. It was the same kind of stories that we've already heard. Mm-hmm. Another, you know, like I said, if you want to pull interesting little things about it to justify not wasting an hour of your time, talked about their daughters. Their oldest daughter clearly is a mark for wrestling and already getting in a ring, according to Stephanie, and looking every bit the heel as mom and dad. So that's something 10 years down the road to note.
How old are the daughters? Did they mention it?
Yeah, the oldest one is 8. The youngest one is 4. Yeah, she's already in a ring. Isn't that scary?
She's running the rope, the bottom rope.
She's working with Natalya.
Oh, really?
That was mentioned in there, that she's working with Natalya.
Break my daughter's back and you're cut.
So apparently Natalya has been upgraded to babysitter for Stephanie's child.
My goodness.
That's good news for her.
Hey, getting in good with the family, though.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this helps Tyson Kidd and your boy Cesaro. I don't
know. Whatever works.
But anyway, like I said, controversial it was not. Chris Jericho, I am sick of. Like, I am just so sick of him and his BS. And I'm sure he'll go on another rant about how, oh, well, he doesn't want to do those types of interviews and whatever. But a lot of the people that had backlash to it, they want Austin back. And I don't blame them. Because the one difference, if you want to take out my personal bias of not liking Chris Jericho now, and all the rest of it, the one difference between Jericho and Austin is simply this. Austin, when he did his interviews, I felt represented the WWE fans. Chris Jericho represents himself and whatever he wants to talk about.
And basically WWE too, right? Because it's almost as if he's being fed these questions as to not, you know, stir controversy or cause any mischief. You know, throw any hard zingers at Stephanie, throw any hard zingers at Triple H that might not look good on him, but again, he's kind of playing it safe, and that's not good TV.
Well, that was another weird moment in the first, like, 10 minutes of the show. Vince was actually there watching part of the interview, and it was addressed on camera by both Stephanie and Triple H, or Stephanie and Jericho.
So you have the chairman staring a hole into your heart the entire time. Like, of course Jericho's not going to say anything dumb.
Well, he was actually giving them the finger, which is typical Vince.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, typical Vince McMahon. But the fact he's there and kind of watching over like a hawk, if Austin's there and he's doing the interview with Stephanie, he's not having that.
He won't care. He'll ask whatever
he
wants.
Well, he'd give the finger back to Vince and tell him to get out.
Yeah.
Like
Vince wouldn't be there at all.
that's my point. I think Austin has much more credibility as an interviewer than Chris Jericho, bottom line.
Agreed.
Anyway, we did mention Extreme Rules happened. I felt this was a nothing pay-per-view. I took very little out of it other than Naomi has cool shoes.
And sicker glasses.
Yeah, well, she kind of stole Sasha Banks' glasses. I'm not digging that.
Yeah, poor Sasha Banks. Everyone seems to be stealing her gimmick before she even makes it to the main roster.
Well, she's become, you know, like Tyler Breeze. I mean, The Miz stole a lot of Tyler Breeze's stuff. Now we got
good point.
Naomi stealing Sasha Banks' stuff, so I don't know about that. But, no, like, this pay-per-view, to me, it was nothing. Like, it was really... Like, a lot of people said, and I don't disagree, the best match on that show was the tag team title match, which wasn't even supposed to be on the show, by the way.
100%. That was the match of the night. And like you said, it was bumped because of the Daniel Bryan situation where the Intercontinental title match was just canceled because of his injury. So, and then they had Bad News Bear take on Neville on the pre-show, and that was one of the better matches as well.
And we'd see that match again later in the week because it was announced on that show the King of the Ring was back!
Yay!
From out of nowhere, and oh, by the way, we'll all be done by Tuesday. And it had so little promotion that if you missed WWE this weekend and Miss Raw, you literally didn't know the King of the Ring happened.
It was like a five-second snippet when they were advertising the network and saying, hey, this is what's going to be happening every single day of the week. Oh, by the way, on Tuesday is the finals of a King of the Ring tournament that we're just announcing right now.
Yeah, and John Cena and Rusev had a brutal, like, chain match. I thought that was awful. It's like, bottom line, this goes to the whole theme name of this show. You cannot have a pay-per-view named Extreme Rules in the PG era. It just doesn't work anymore. I'm sorry. If you're going to have a match with a friggin' chain and no one ends up bloody, and it basically is a glorified tug-of-war match, I really don't want to see that.
Chain matches are enjoyable. Same with strap matches when they're not attached by the wrist. Because if you have to touch the four corners to win, that's not entertaining. I didn't enjoy that. So this was definitely of their, what was it, this was their third match?
Yeah, and now we're getting a fourth.
Yeah, I quit match. We all know what's going to happen there.
Yeah, John Cena I quit matches. Let me think. Has he ever lost one of those? I don't believe he has.
He's 5-0.
And I believe he'll be 6-0. And then what happens to poor Rusev? That's going to be a conversation down the road.
Who also might be in a world of hurt because it looks like they're really going full steam ahead with this split with Lana.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. And I don't know what to make of that. I mean, where does Lana go from this is what I don't get.
They want to push her as the top diva in the company.
Wrestling?
Yeah, they want to get her in the ring.
Oh, great. So, like, now we're taking the divas division and we're putting it in the hands of the redheaded girl who was a zero, and Brian Kendrick has been assigned to get her up to a one, and Lana, who we honestly don't know has any wrestling ability. These are the two that are going to carry your Divas division. When you have Sasha Banks sitting in NXT, you have Charlotte sitting in NXT, Bayley sitting in NXT, even Dana Brooke, I think, is further along than those two sitting in NXT, and on and on and on.
You can't deny Lana's popularity, though. She is one beautiful lady.
She is, but I mean, she's perfect in the role she's in. If not, then she needs to be a manager for someone else.
Would you mind her in kind of like an authority role, like perhaps the general manager of Raw?
I don't know. With the Russian thing, I don't think it works. I think she should be wooed into the American ways. I think this may sound odd, but I would even put her with someone like Dolph Ziggler.
You think so?
Why not? I mean, like kind of American, get the Russian thing away and Americanize her. I mean, think of the vignettes you could do with some baby face trying to Americanize Lana, and then there's Rusev's next program, too, by the way. Whoever the guy is that steals Lana away, Rusev, even though he's the one who pushed Lana away, is mad that she has become Americanized by this just terrible bastard babyface. And there's your next program.
Rusev can only be hurt by this, though. I mean, he's going into the next pay-per-view payback. He has that I Quit match, a match he's certainly not going to win. Plus, he's going to lose Lana. He's gonna actually have a similar career, if you think about it, to Marvelous Mark Merrill, where Sable overshadowed him. And then, you know, when you get to the split, Merrill gets lost in the shuffle. Rusev could be saddled with, like, a silly Vladimir Kozlov comedic gimmick if things don't pan out for him.
I don't know where we are with that, but one thing I will say, the extended program with Cena does no favors for anyone.
It should have ended at Extreme Rules.
Look at where how long it took Bray Wyatt to kind of get past that Cena feud. It didn't build him up. It made him weak. I mean, anyone who works an extended period with John Cena doesn't get built up. They get made weaker, in my opinion.
Because he's not winning. I mean, this would be his third pay-per-view loss in a row to the same guy. Like, how does that benefit him?
Yeah, and I mean, even you know, if they do the screwy finishes, like, no one gets clean wins over Cena. You get no contests, you know, and then at the end of the whole program, Cena has to win, and it's silly. And, you know, it's unfortunate because I like what they're doing with Cena with the open challenges and all that. This should have been it. Let Rusev move on, you know?
Yeah.
I don't understand why we had to have an I Quit match. I mean, granted, I think that's the match that should end this feud, but I think it should have happened a long time ago. Like, I think that should have been the WrestleMania match, to be honest.
Well, they're straddled for time, right? Because there's only 3 weeks between Extreme Rules and Payback, so they had to go ahead with another Rusev match because there's not enough time to build another feud for that pay-per-view.
Yeah, but it's just silly. Like, it really bugs me. And that's the other thing, too. It's like, what makes Payback be any better than what we saw at Extreme Rules?
It's just rematches, essentially.
Yeah, it's like, it's nothing special. No one's coming back for it. I mean, let's put it this way. I'll have gone to the ROH show the night before.
Yeah.
I don't know how anxious I'll be to even watch Payback, to be honest with you, after seeing, you know, the New Japan and ROH stars go at it. I'm thinking that Payback will leave me feeling really sour.
And plus, Extreme Rules kind of left that bad taste in your mouth because afterwards you're like, well, I didn't really need to see this. I didn't have to go out of my way, spend 3 hours to watch this event because, you know, I could watch on Raw, they'll recap everything. There wasn't like that one big moment where you have to go back and see it.
So you're saying the New Day winning the tag team titles?
No. that's Bush League. I mean, good for them. I'm all for them winning the titles just because
New Day?
Sucks.
They're champs now. It's New Day are champs now, aren't
Yeah,
they?
They're champs. I dig it, though. I like the whole Cesaro and Tyson Kidd chasing them. Hopefully they gain some momentum as faces. But the New Day are entertaining. Like, I dig the whole how they embrace, or they don't actually embrace, they kind of like ridicule the fans because they're not cheering for them. Like, what are you doing? You're supposed to love us.
I think the best line in that whole match was Xavier Woods is on the outside. Why are you booing? We're winning!
Yeah.
Like, it's like he doesn't understand and he's not in on the joke.
It reminded me, you remember when Kurt Angle had his debut match at Survivor Series, and it was against Sean Stasiak, I think, and the fans were not receptive to him at all. He goes out to the ringside, he grabs a microphone and says, "You do not boo me! I am an Olympic gold medalist! You do not boo me!" That took me back to when Xavier Woods said that, and I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, it was, it was pretty good. So that was that. Extreme Rules was what it was. Oh, big surprise, Seth Rollins still your world champion. Using the SKO, the latest and greatest move that Seth Rollins is doing that isn't the curb stomp. I don't know. That match just did nothing for me. Kane, again, has been built into this storyline. We're getting Seth Rollins and Kane. I mean, we talked about it and you dreaded it on the last podcast, but it's happening at some point. It might not just be a TV thing, but we're getting a Seth Rollins-Kane match.
Well, it's not a Payback, thank God.
Well, no, it isn't. But Kane could still get put in there as a guest referee.
Because the fans didn't vote on that, that's why. We leave all of our pay-per-view main events to the WWE app.
Well, at least Kane does.
Yeah, Kane, big decision maker right there. His resume, I'll just let everyone else do my job for me.
Kane has a future in politics with the way he controls things on Raw. I'll just say that.
Mr. Glenn Jacobs.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a big libertarian. Like, you know, once he retires, that's what he's going to be doing.
Yeah.
He'll be a big libertarian.
Like, I hate politics enough, now I have to watch Kane beat it, too. Like, get right in the mix of it.
Maybe one day we'll have libertarian Kane going against Republican Stephanie McMahon. It'll be exciting.
President Kane.
Well, no, President Stephanie.
Hellfire and budget cuts.
I don't know. It's all... Those are things to worry about in your future, America. As if you don't have enough to worry about.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, in all seriousness, we'll talk ROH in a little bit, but they're based in Baltimore, and all that's been going on in Baltimore, all the best to those people, and hopefully, you know, everything works out for them as their city was getting torn apart before everyone's eyes on the news this week. And, you know, obviously that's part of the reason we don't have an ROH guest this week. I just didn't care to bother ROH based in Baltimore with worrying about our little podcast getting the guests. I thought they had bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, it's really ugly out there. Kind of, you know, makes you take a step back, look at the world in a different light. I mean, it's brutal right now.
I'm happy to be Canadian, I'll just say that.
Definitely.
Anyway, so we did have King of the Ring, as mentioned. Great idea on the surface. I mean, everyone's wanted King of the Ring back. Let's backtrack in this, even though it's all happened. I guess we got to kind of digest this all at once. First and foremost, when you first saw the field for this tournament, were you disappointed, or happy? I was kind of somewhere between disappointed and eh.
No, I was digging it. It just kind of looked like a WWE Intercontinental title tournament. Like, they were just kind of biding time with the whole Daniel Bryan thing. But, you know, you look up and down the roster, it was essentially the guys that were in that ladder match at WrestleMania, plus Neville, plus, Sheamus. So, I mean, the matches themselves are really good. I mean, a couple of really stood out, especially on Raw. I thought Neville and Luke Harper was phenomenal. I didn't actually catch the King of the Ring special that Tuesday because I canceled my network subscription, but I heard that Bad News Barrett won the damn thing, and I'm happy with it.
Jeez. See, that's why they made the King of the Ring, to stop you from canceling your subscription.
Yeah, well, they failed in that regard.
Now we know. Anyway, what happened was Neville defeated Sheamus. And Dolph Ziggler somehow got involved, although I didn't see that match. I did see the next match. Bad News Barrett surprisingly beat R-Truth. How did R-Truth get to the semifinals of this? Like, seriously. Yeah. I think that was my biggest sticking point with this. A, R-Truth even being in this. B, the fact he made it to the semifinals. It bothered me.
Who else would you have put in that role? It had to be a face to go up against Barrett.
Surely to God there's someone on this roster that's bigger than R-Truth.
Fandango?
No, I don't know if he's bigger than R-Truth.
He could be.
I don't think so.
Compared to it, certainly.
That's another debate for another day, I think. But anyway, that bothered me, R-Truth in the semifinals. Anyway, Barrett beat him. We got a little bit of a delay, and then we had the finals. I loved the finish of this. I thought it was pretty good. Barrett had whipped Neville into the corner. Neville was coming back in and got nailed with a bullhammer. Great finish. This is interesting because I think Wade Barrett is an interesting guy, and I wanted to write a piece, and with all that's been going on this week, I haven't got around to it. Maybe I will, or maybe I'll just end up using this little conversation as my thoughts on it. But Wade Barrett's a guy, he's never really lived up to his potential. He's always had big moments, big times where he thought, when he first came in, he was the leader of the Nexus, he was feuding with John Cena, and then he fell down. Another example of John Cena, by the way, getting someone over. Way to go, John. Anyway, and, you know, he was in the core, and he's been a 5-time Intercontinental Champion, he's often been injured, and now he gets this role as King. I think the perfect guy for this role. I just don't know if he can do anything with it.
Well, he's going to have to just kind of embrace that gimmick change. Like, on Monday Night Raw, he'll probably be called King Barrett moving forward. But you're right. I think WWE has had a hard time trying to invest in him as a main event player because of the fact that he's been injured so damn much. And like you said, maybe you can make a case that his whole early career working with Cena, not being able to get over with the Nexus, and then the core was a miserable failure. Maybe that's a red flag against him as well. But I think this is the perfect opportunity to slowly build him back up. He's been stuck in the IC title picture for the last several years. I think now is the time to make him more of a main event player. And this King of the Ring gimmick hopefully gets him to that point.
It's going to be one of two things. He's either going to be King Booker or he's going to be the one Billy Gunn. I don't know which it'll be.
Yeah.
But I don't think there'll be much in between. And it was just that it was an interesting choice all when all is said and done.
But an obvious one.
Yeah, when I looked at those brackets, I instantly knew the final. It was going to be Neville and Barrett. And I knew it right off because they need to build up Neville. And I must admit, since last week, a lot of rehab being done to Adrian Neville. Now he is, what do they say now when he gets announced?
The new sensation.
The new sensation, Adrian Neville. I wish we had some Adrian Neville music, or Neville music to just throw in here, you know.
He's super over.
Yeah, but
like the fans really love this guy.
Yeah, but there is an Adrian Neville, or a Neville the singer, right?
Adrian Neville the singer?
Yeah.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah, there's, it might not be Adrian Neville, I can't think of his first name, but anyway.
I love whenever Neville trends on Twitter, it's always Adrian Neville. Yeah, like fans know his first name.
Yeah, it's like if you get like a slow jam CD, you'll get a Neville song on there. So there you go. But anyway, the wrestler Neville. Yeah, he had a strong run in this tournament. He needed to have one if they're going to put him in it. And the way he lost wasn't, you know, humiliating by any stretch, I thought. You know, good job all around by him in this tournament, and we'll see where he goes from here. I think he's obviously going to have a program with Barrett, I would think.
Yeah, I expect those two to have a match at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, it would make sense, and maybe even a little program. I wouldn't mind it, where Neville kind of gets the best of the King. Although, when we're talking about building up Bad News Barrett, that's not good news for him.
Yeah, you don't want him to lose too soon, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he can torment Neville somehow. I don't know how it would work, but obviously I see these two being paired. And it's a good pairing, too, because it's two guys from England. The English fans, I think, will get into that.
Are they just going to make Europeans King of the Rings for the future? I mean, the last three have been all from Ireland and England.
Well, there have been a bit of a break in between. I mean,
Sheamus
was in 2010,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't think there's been a deliberate plot over the years to make them all Europeans.
Get all the previous kings together and form a faction. In one of the recent video games, they had that as one of the storylines, where it was Barrett, Regal, Sheamus, and when McIntyre was around, they had like this thing called the Kingdom, and I thought that was a cool premise. And
the Kingdom,
TV, yeah, the Kingdom.
Wait a second, no, there's only one Kingdom in the wrestling landscape, and it's not them. It is Adam Cole. It is Matt Taven. It is Michael Bennett and Maria Kanellis. How dare you on this program? I am very upset.
That's what it was. Due to THQ or whatever it was, 2K Sports. That was their idea.
What next? Are you going to invent a Mount Rushmore?
Yeah.
No, you're not. Not on this program, sir.
John Cena as the leader.
Frank, you're just...
I am pissing off James Borbath right now.
That's true. You know, Chris Walder got a job. Maybe we'll have to replace him on this podcast. He won't have time for us anymore.
Mr. Lopez, hear this out, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know. But, no, in all seriousness, Chris did get a job, but he is sticking on with the podcast. But that's neither here nor there. Maybe we'll get into that at the end. But anyhow... Yeah, where were we going with this? You just totally pissed me off. My eyes went red, and I just went fuming.
We were talking about Neville and Barrett, and Barrett's the King of the Ring, and it was an obvious choice, and yada, yada, yada.
Okay, so I think we were done with that. And then you dare insult the Kingdom. I don't know.
Well, let's get into the ROH talk, since that was such a beautiful segue on my behalf.
Actually, let's talk a little bit about NXT, and we'll kind of merge into the ROH, because I think... the war has begun between these two factions or companies or whatever. NXT, now doing a show in Philadelphia the next day after ROH. Now doing two shows in Philadelphia the next day after ROH is there with New Japan for 2 days. Philadelphia, you poor people are going to be poor if you're wrestling fans, but this to me is a clear sign. We are going to war, ROH and NXT. It looks more and more like NXT has kind of got its targets on ROH, and it really, you know, it's interesting to see how this will all develop. I'm really curious to see where this all leads.
There's no war. There was just a high demand for NXT tickets.
Oh, really? So it's just by coincidence, they held a building in Philadelphia that ROH wanted, and now instead of having one show, they're having two shows, just like ROH. And it happens to be in one of ROH's stronger markets in Philadelphia. Yeah, it's all just coincidence, Chris Walder.
Exactly. See, you're coming around.
Really? Did you ever get that job? That's not the job you got, right, with WWE?
No, I was screwed from the get-go.
Because you sound like a member of the Authority right now.
Do I?
Deny, deny, deny.
Where's my interview, Jericho?
Well, you can get softball questions from Chris Jericho, too.
We'll talk about the good old days in Winnipeg.
Yeah, wow.
Playing hockey on the local pond.
Alrighty, you do that. We're not talking hockey on this podcast, we'll say that much.
Definitely not.
Anyway, but
you're getting a little bit overzealous with this whole war thing. You think there's really a plot for NXT or WWE to kind of eliminate ROH?
So not necessarily directly to eliminate ROH, but this is a sign, I think, not just to ROH, but to all indie federations, we're the WWE and we're coming to your turf.
No, it's, as much as I love NXT, I can't call them an indie company as long as Alex Riley is at the forefront.
Well, he is indie-rific. He will soon be on the indies, as Kevin Owens has made perfectly clear on NXT this week. Kevin Owens on commentary, I think many people are aware of Kevin's talents in the ring. Unless you're a PWG fan or a fan of really obscure independent wrestling, I don't know if you're as familiar of how great he is on commentary. He is fantastic.
He'll have a job for life if the whole wrestling thing never works out, although it's clearly going to. His commentary is gold. It takes me back when CM Punk used to do it. He's sarcastic, he's blunt, he's to the point.
And he blurs that line very nicely.
Definitely.
He really does, and I mean, it's funny, I was going to say the exact same name. Kevin Owens, CM Punk, they can do a little bit of everything, and Kevin Owens, my oh my, he was fantastic on commentary this week.
Loved it.
I mean, he literally took the whole announce team and Alex Riley and threw them all under the bus.
Yeah, that's true. He overshadowed everybody.
Yeah,
that's good.
It's like all throughout it, he's going, well, aren't you supposed to be calling the match right now? Like, yeah, well, what's with that?
Yeah.
I don't know how that'll serve him on the main roster, mind you. But in NXT, gold.
Put him next to Lawler and all these guys.
Yeah, but when he's saying that to Michael Cole, what will be the reaction to it as opposed to down in NXT?
Just a dumbfounded face.
Well, no, I worry about that, though, because like they don't exactly call the matches on Raw. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Yeah, it's more about advertising the main event.
Yeah, so anyway, great job by Kevin with that, and he ends up breaking up the match between Sami Zayn and Alex Riley, which in and of itself was a weird pairing, but whatever.
Yeah.
It got what we wanted to accomplish out of it, and, you know, NXT keeps chugging along, and I think, you know, now with all these touring dates announced, boy oh boy, this is interesting stuff for NXT.
And Unstoppable is shaping up to be a really good card, too.
Oh, is that what they're calling
That's
this one?
That's what they're calling it, Unstoppable.
Kevin Owens is unstoppable, it's true. No one is ever going to. NXT champion forever.
Yeah, you'd like that.
Just like Adam Cole was going to be ROH champion forever.
Baby!
Kevin Owens, NXT champion forever.
If we ever get that dream crossover with ROH and NXT, Cole versus Owens.
It'll be Cole Adams challenging Kevin Owens.
Cole Adams. Yeah.
I have a ticket from the original battle, which happened in Toronto last year. So
Adam Rule.
Adam Cole tells me it's a one of a kind. So
oh, is it?
If I ever get down on my luck and you know, Steen and Cole main event of WrestleMania,
yeah,
you may see that ticket on eBay. I'm just saying.
Never say never, right, Stephanie?
That's right. Never say never. Anything can happen, even on our podcast. That is controversial.
Yeah. We bridged the line, man.
Hey, compared to the WWE, we are controversial. We have talked about 10 things on this program that they would not touch.
That is true.
And I don't even know what they are, but I just know we have.
But we'll never work there because of me, especially being a Swiss millennial.
Yeah, you're not getting in, that's clear.
Never. They couldn't send me a letter or something just so I could mention it on the air?
Yeah, you know, like, never mind. Like, you know, you could, like, you know what I would do? I'd get, like, a big job,
yeah.
And you'd get invited to a WWE show. By the way, you could have hired me, like, back in, like, 2014. I applied. You never even sent a letter.
Yeah, well, what's the deal? I'm disappointed. I just wanted that letter. Just confirmation that they at least knew that I applied for this job.
Speaking of which, before we get to ROH, people getting jobs, it reminded me, here is your 60 seconds of TNA. Billy Corgan is now head of creative in TNA, or what the hell is going on with that?
He's just a rat in a cage. Get that reference, Rockers.
Yeah,
you don't know it, obviously. That went right over your head.
No, it was a song.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But who cares that he's, what, is he a writer now?
He's head of creative, I don't know.
He's the head of creative?
He's in creative.
Stop. Okay,
he is in creative, I know that much. He's not head, I think I was joking about the head part.
I know he used to run a wrestling company, but...
He did, in Chicago.
Yeah, but this is madness. TNA is all about the promotion that comes with him... being a part of the writing team, but other than that, whatever. WWE had Freddie Prinze be a writer.
No, I think this is weirder. About. I was going to bring that up. I think this is weirder than Freddie Prinze Jr. I really do.
Nothing's weirder than that.
No, I think it is. It's really very weird.
But at least Corgan's been in wrestling.
Okay, well, whatever. But he's basically just a fan.
All right. Well, now he has the main role in a company that's on its last breath. So
yeah, that's very exciting for him. A company. We hope not on its last breath, ROH. Actually, you know, we talk about this stuff with NXT, but ROH keeps chugging along and keeps doing well. They announced this week they've got TV in Dallas. That's a big deal for ROH. So, you know, they're expanding, more viewers, more eyes. You know, in some respects, the company's looking really, really good. But at the end of the day, with NXT out there, I worry because... I just feel like anyone I'm watching on ROH Wrestling could get swallowed up by NXT at any moment other than the Briscoes.
Yeah, other than the Briscoes, I was about to say. But that's what kind of ROH has become now, like a developmental for the developmental.
Yeah, it's become like double-A baseball, which,
yeah.
You know, like, that's great if you live in a little town and that's your home team, but I don't know if that's great if you're trying to make money off of this.
Oh, and they just aired the tag title change, right, on television?
Yeah, which was, you know, like, it kind of got spoiled because it was pretty much out there, but in case you were living under a rock, the KRD ended up being Christopher Daniels, Kazarian, and...
Chris Sabin,
former TNA employee.
Dixie Carter's posse.
Yeah, so they have come and taken the tag team titles in ROH, and... you know, it's interesting times. I mean, I think these four cards coming up for ROH with the New Japan Stars, they're just phenomenal cards. Like, it's hard to argue they're not fantastic. And I mean, when we talk about, you know, comparing NXT to ROH in some respects, I think all of these ROH cards you could easily stack up against the NXT pay-per-view and say... with the exception of the main event, ROH has the much better show.
Oh, totally. It's because of the New Japan Alliance, right? Because they're bringing over their top guys like Tanahashi, Okada, Naito, and you're seeing them go up against ROH's top stars. NXT can never pull that off, and that's why I'm more excited about War of the Worlds and Global Wars than I would be for maybe even the NXT TakeOver event.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting because... The Young Bucks, too, they're part of New Japan, and part of the reason they stated they didn't go back to the WWE is because New Japan offered them a really sweet deal to stay, and it was good enough that they felt it was in their best interest financially to stay. So, you know, it's really interesting times, because I think as far as wrestling apples to apples, I think no question... you know, it's a fair fight. But then when you get into the business side of things, I don't know if it's a fair fight. because WWE doesn't need to make money off of NXT. How many people they get into house shows, that's all gravy money for them. ROH needs to pull houses. They need to make money. Like, they are really relying on making a lot of money off of these shows, not just the co-promoted ones with New Japan, but in general. When ROH comes to town, it's important what that figure is that they get at a building to their bottom line. WWE, not so much.
And NXT also has the power of being able to sway indie performers with the opportunity of being a main roster WWE star, because that's always the end goal at the end of the day, right? When you see the top guys like the Adam Coles of the world, you know, in the back of their mind, they see their friends heading over to NXT, and they're not making the money they can on the independent scene, but once they make it to the main roster, WWE's top guys right now are NXT prodigies, and I think you can't ignore that.
I mean, it's hard to say now, because, like, with NXT, we don't know what anyone's making, but they do have merchandise. From what I've heard, and this is just what I've heard, Kevin Owens is doing tremendously well, like, with his merchandise sales. So what does that mean? Like, I know Kevin did well on the independents selling merchandise. Is he doing better with the WWE? I don't know. That's a question Kevin could answer. Kevin isn't going to be on the show next week, tomorrow, you know, a month from now, probably. I say probably, he won't be.
He won't be.
But, you know, like, we're not going to get the answer to that question from Kevin Owens, is my point. So, I don't know where it's heading, but it's interesting. And it's more scary for ROH because of the fact that when ROH was doing fairly well, they went to Sinclair, they asked for more money to kind of up their production and stuff like that, and they kind of got shot down. Now, what happens if big WWE comes to Sinclair and says, look, here's a big pile of money, we want to buy ROH?
Whoa. That would be something.
Well, what happens? Does Sinclair turn down the big pile of money?
How could they?
I mean, ROH is obviously programming for them, but I think it's programming that has a price.
Yeah, well, at WWE, they could offer a lot of money for that. It would be hard to turn down.
And then, you know, who knows? And hey, that might be the best thing for ROH's survival, because it could end up being something like what they did with ECW back in the day, where WWE was kind of like a silent partner in ECW.
You think it would ever get to that point? Because they are kind of feeding them all of this great talent.
Hey, TNA doesn't give them anybody.
They're even giving them writers now, with Jacobs being on the
team. Yeah, like, I mean, ROH is a great resource for them. Like, if they look at their last 10 years, they'd be silly not to admit, like, basically half of our roster has come from this company.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, the world champion is an ROH guy.
Yeah, and many world champions. Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, even though they don't like him, he was. And Drew Money. You know, even though they don't know what to do with him, Cesaro. You know, like, lots of guys. And I just think, you know, to have that kind of synergy. And even, you know, even do, like, they could do the Dream kind of thing. They could have a similar thing like ROH has with New Japan, where maybe once a year we see ROH versus NXT.
That would be so, that gets the juices flowing, man, ROH versus NXT.
And for ROH, hey, if they were owned by WWE, that's more content for your network.
Exactly.
Like you'd have to work that. You'd have to work that out with Sinclair, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think that's a viable option for them, where, you know, you could see an ROH pay-per-view on WWE Network 4 times a year. That would be great.
Definitely.
Anyway.
It's probably not going to happen, though.
Well, I think I'm projecting way down the line here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking big picture, where it's... We're talking months and years probably down the line, but, I mean, it seems like the road we're heading down.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, we'll talk more in depth about the ROH cards coming up and, you know, what's going on with them. But, obviously, it looks like it's going to be exciting. If you're in Philadelphia, my God, you have, like, the wrestling week of wrestling weeks. I mean, maybe even rivaling WrestleMania week.
Prepare
in Philadelphia. Yeah, from Tuesday to Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it is like WrestleMania week in Philadelphia, or Wrestling Week. I don't know what you'd call it.
We just need that in Toronto, man. Bring your stuff over here. I know we're getting the Global Awards, but NXT, listen up.
Yeah, hey, if NXT's plan is to wipe out ROH, Toronto is a big market for ROH.
Yeah, we see a surprise show at it before Global Wars.
Yeah, there we go.
Then I'll start believing you with the whole TakeOver stuff.
They'll be coming. They'll invade the Rico Center, and they'll be there.
So, awesome.
Who knows? I'd love to see it, though. I'd love to see NXT come up to Toronto, Hamilton. You know, Hamilton might be a place, too, because...
Yeah, you'd like that.
Well, no, like, B markets for WWE. Hamilton screams that NXT show at Cops Coliseum would draw fairly well, I would think. But who knows? It's interesting times, though, in that respect. That said, you know, at least ROH has a roster, unlike Global Force Wrestling, who just books shows with no roster.
Yeah, look at all those AA, AAA baseball stadiums going to be packed to the rim to see vacant versus vacant.
Yeah, that'll be exciting. You know, maybe the GWF can have a draft like the NFL and just draft people.
Dig up the ROH's last stars like Cheeseburger and Romantic Touch.
No, they just draft people. They have the rights to them. GWF drafts John Cena. He's never coming, but they have the rights to him, you know, the GWF brand.
If he wants to come, he's more than welcome to.
I'm sure he's not coming, though.
Yeah, I'm positive.
Yeah, so maybe CM Punk, they could draft him.
Oh, no.
Well, they could. They could draft him. He's not coming. But,
sure, yeah.
You know, like, that's what you do.
Go get San Martino while you're at it, too. Or
Bruno, yeah. Bruno's still alive.
Bruno!
He filled up the baseball stadiums back in the day.
I just wanted to say Bruno because of the Raptors comparison.
Which
only me and you will get. If any other Raptors fans out there, follow me on Twitter at Walder Sports.
Why would they? They're so depressed right now. Why would they follow anything to do with the Raptors? In fact, if you follow Walder and you like the Raptors, unfollow him until September. It'll only depress you what he has to say.
Because me and you must be like the only two wrestling Raptor guys, even though I'm more of a Raptors guy.
Not true. There's a few others.
There's
a few others.
We're pretty awesome.
Jerome Williams used to be a huge wrestling fan.
Tracy
I don't think
Murray
he is as much
huge
anymore.
Wrestling fan.
Tracy Murray was a huge wrestling fan. Jamal McClure, who's a coach with the Raptors now, huge wrestling fan. Like, when he played, there was a time in the Raptors' schedule, and it was this odd anomaly where the Raptors actually ended up in the same town as WWE twice on the road. Both times, Jamal McClure went to the show.
Sick.
Yeah.
McClure, come on the show.
I don't know. That's one for you to pull off, not me.
I'd love to do it.
Oh, yeah. Talk wrestling with Jamal McClure.
Yes, sir.
The Big Cat.
The Big Cat?
Yeah, that was his nickname. Yeah, because
really?
He played for the Wildcats. And then, of course, there was, in wrestling, there was Big Cat Ernie Ladd. Go back on like the WWE archives, you'll find Ernie Ladd.
I know me some Ernie Ladd.
There you go.
I'm a Swiss millennial, but I'm still sharp.
And there was a guy drafted in the NFL draft who has a nickname, the Big Cat, going to the New York Jets. So
how original.
Yeah, and then I have the next Samoan superstar, by the way, based on the NFL draft.
Who is it?
This guy, Danny Shelton, played at Washington. He is a Samoan. When he was drafted, he came on the stage and literally picked up the commissioner, and I thought he was going to toss him. It was
great. That was the guy. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, big Samoan. He will be the next Umaga.
Or Roman Reigns.
No, Umaga.
Umaga?
This guy is big, and he's not... He's playing football, but he's not muscular football shape. He's big lineman football shape.
Cool. I need to go back and watch that, then.
Yeah, so...
I only saw him from the back picking up Goodell. I didn't actually get a...
Well, he had the whole Samoan garb on, so it was great.
Yeah, he had like a... What was it? Like a... It wasn't a Hawaiian shirt, but something that was a little bit
more like
colorful.
The whole Samoan, like, ceremonial getup. We've seen it. Basically, the Usos.
Yeah, it wasn't a normal suit, yeah.
Yeah, minus the face paint, the Usos.
Right. Yeah, face paint.
No face paint. You know what is interesting with the Naomi heel turn? what has been lost in this is what does her husband think of all this?
He does nothing during it. You keep him off TV. You keep him out of the picture entirely.
No, I want to. I want to know what he thinks of his wife and his.
Her, no, you don't.
Her glowing shoes. I do want to know.
No, you don't. About the glowing shoes, maybe not the heel turn.
I want to know.
Maybe he gets a heel turn until his brother comes.
That's what I mean. Well, maybe this could. Maybe they could go as this like heel faction, as this heel couple. And then the other Uso comes back, and, you know, what's the deal? We're good
guys.
Do we
even know which Uso is hurt right now? Like, I can't tell them apart. Jimmy or Jay?
Yeah, I think it, the one who is not married to the Uso is the one that's hurt.
Sure.
Or the one that's not married to Naomi, if that made any sense.
I believe you, sure.
I don't know, but
yeah.
One of them's hurt. And even if he is hurt, he even better, he can be your heel manager and stay on TV.
Like Stevie Richards was to Victoria.
Yeah, why not? Like, just have him out there. I think it works. But they don't put hurt people out there on television. They don't do that anymore.
Yeah, they don't.
Stone Cold Steve Austin, he had like a 6-month run like that.
Yeah, he was tough.
Well, they made him tough, but was he any tougher than any of these other guys that have been hurt?
Well, he was making the company money, too.
Well, Daniel Bryan doesn't make the company money?
Yeah, but this guy is, like, going to be a paraplegic soon if he doesn't shape up.
Wow.
I'm serious. He might paralyze himself if he's too stubborn to not take it smoother in the ring.
Okay, so let's talk Daniel Bryan. What the hell is going on with him? I mean, the NHL here up in Canada is known for their vagueness about injuries, where we get upper and lower body injuries. The WWF has not even given us an upper or lower body. We have heard nothing as to what's wrong with this guy. We've heard all kinds of rumors. He's had a concussion. He's screwed up his neck again. We don't know what the hell's wrong with him. We don't know how long he's going to be out. We get this weird kind of babyface promo from his wife, Brie Mode herself, almost in tears about Daniel Bryan. I mean, I think that was storyline. It sure seemed like it, because now I think they're trying to turn the Bella's face for whatever reason, but I'm totally confused about what's going on with Daniel Bryan. The one thing I'm not confused about, though, I said it long before he came back, I said this man would have to drastically reduce his style and change it. He has made no effort to do that. Zero, nada. And that has to happen.
Well, all we know right now is that, I mean, he's out. And like you said, WWE really hasn't gone into detail about what's wrong. But what we do know is about he has a history with his neck. It radiated down to his arm. He was losing strength in his arm and hand. And I think that's what's acting up now. It's just a shame, you know, because we were in the same situation last year where Bryan was a champion. He had to be held out, and everyone was wondering more or less what was going to happen to the title picture. But, you know, I think right now, with it only being a mid-card title, more people are concerned about Daniel Bryan's health as a whole. And now, if he has any longevity in the company, you know, in the next 3, 4, 5 years, I mean, can he continue going at the pace he's at? Absolutely not. I mean, the moves that he's doing, he hasn't nailed it down in terms of, like, diving through the ropes or jumping off the top rope or delivering his drop kick in the corner. Like, he needs to cut that out. Otherwise, what I said was real. He could paralyze himself.
No, I agree with you. I just think it's he has to have that Mick Foley moment and realize I've got to change things. And Daniel Bryan, in all honesty, Daniel Bryan could do the Mick Foley thing. We saw the stuff he did with Kane, and although a lot of people were upset by it at the time and felt it was a way to try and bury Daniel Bryan, the guy is legitimately funny in the right circumstances and used the right way. I think, you know, he could do a character similar to Mick Foley in where he's more of a comedic role, a guy who is respected for all he's done in the ring, but kind of given this more kind of comedic role. I think, you know, for longevity in the company, that's how I do it if he's really messed up to the point that we can't really be risking him to the point that we are.
Well, there has to be change. And when he does come back, and we don't even know when he's going to be back, they might have to strip the title of him, of course, if he's gone for the next month or so. But
that's the one thing. They haven't stripped the title, which makes me think they aren't necessarily sure that this is a long-term thing.
That, like I said earlier, I think they're biding time with that King of the Ring thing, but again, they should have spread that out, too. You have Bad News Barrett kind of being the number one heel in the...
That was a total waste. Like they were making a hard push for their network this week with, you know, they had the Jerry Springer Show debut, which, by God, I watched that. Don't watch it. It's a waste of time. They had that on. Mick Foley did his one-man show, which I actually liked. I thought it was pretty good. And they had, of course, the Stephanie Chris Jericho interview, which if you missed the start of the podcast, which I'm not sure why, if you got to this point, I'm sure you heard the beginning. We wasn't a big fan of the whole Chris Jericho Stephanie interview. And tonight they're having the big Floyd Money Mayweather thing with Big Show, from reliving that whole thing that they did with Floyd, which makes sense with the fight coming up on Saturday. But a big push for the network, and I just think the King of the Ring got lost in the shuffle of all that, and I think, you know, why do we need a payback? Why couldn't King of the Ring been payback?
Well, they should have spread that tournament out. You know, have the first round 1 week, the semifinals another, and then you have it culminating at Payback. That way you can kind of compensate for there not being an Intercontinental title match and Daniel Bryan not being around. But they chose to go it a different way. It was over in 48 hours. Big mistake.
Well, here's my thing. Why not introduce the fact, like they did, that the King of the Ring is coming back? Great. Have qualifying matches to make it into King of the Ring and do the whole entire tournament at Payback.
That would have been a good idea, but again, WWE would never do that.
And then Payback actually just turns back into the King of the Ring pay-per-view. Because no one really cared about Payback anyway, let's face it.
Yeah, it's just filler or whatever.
No, but I think, and let's face it, the whole idea was to get people to keep their subscriptions. How many people are keeping their subscriptions to see a King of the Ring tournament as opposed to Roman Reigns versus Randy Orton versus Seth Rollins?
Exactly.
Like, I'm sorry, you're hooking more fans with the King of the Ring tournament.
No, definitely. I'm with you 100% on that.
Yeah,
King of the Ring is unique. Payback is just kind of like any other pay-per-view under any other name.
And this
it's really fast, too.
And this main event just doesn't do it for me. Like, I mean, it's kind of... Seth Rollins as the champion hasn't done it for me as a whole.
I wouldn't go as far as saying that. I mean, maybe we just have differing opinions. But I think Seth Rollins has done a really good job. I think the biggest problem is that he's suffering from Daniel Bryan syndrome, where his first big feud, if you take Orton out of the equation, is essentially with Kane.
I think he's suffering from being a part of the Authority.
He's kind of like a cheesy heel, like a cowardly guy who can't win matches on his own. That's why he needs to have a clean and decisive victory at Payback. I think he needs that just for his entire build.
I almost think he needs to become a bigger heel than the Authority. In other words, he's so much of a heel that he thinks he's bigger and better than the Authority. And the Authority, even though they stay heels, they say, you know what? We're bad, but we're not putting up with you. And they boot him out and literally stick the entire roster on him.
Yeah, that would be cool. I think maybe they're just not going too deep with the heel turn because they have plans to turn him face. If they're going to do the switch with Roman Reigns, which I think they're going to do, then that would mean a switch for Rollins as well. So
no, but eventually you could do that, right? Like, that's what I mean. Eventually, I think if you throw him out there as this uber heel and the Authority has thrown him out to the wolves, I think eventually fans will feel sympathy for him and eventually turn him babyface.
I'm pulling for that anyway.
Anyway, a good idea. Another good idea we've come up with on the podcast that I'm pretty sure you will not be seeing on WWE TV, on WWE Network. It's not happening, probably.
No, sir.
So, anyway, I think that's all that went on in the world of wrestling this week. Is there anything that we have missed or omitted that you feel we should have talked about, Chris Walden?
No, it's a slow week. I mean, unless you want to give me my glorious moment to acknowledge my new job to the fans.
That's right. Chris Walder has a new job, ladies and gentlemen. He is now the grand poobah of basketball at the Score. Now he basically runs basketball over there. He is the man. He's everything.
That's exactly what the contract stated, by the way. I am the grand poobah of the Score.
Well, you know what you gotta do. Like, I mean, clearly the WWE announce team, they are big on their Flintstone references, so you gotta slip one in now and then.
Is that a Flintstone reference?
It is. The Grand Poobah led the Loyal Order of Water Buffaloes.
Nerd.
So there you go. No, you want to know nerd? I can even tell you what Booker T was referencing with the Wayouts on the Flintstones this week on Monday Night Raw, which was not the biggest thing that Booker T said on Raw that was talked about. But the Wayouts, they were an English band that was supposed to be like the Beatles that were on the Flintstones. So yeah,
and I knew that, so good for me.
Yeah, but that reminded me of the one thing that I guess we should talk about as well.
No, we don't need to talk about that. People looked way too much into that. If you want to explain what it was...
Well, that's why I want to talk about it, because I think it was severely overblown, and Booker T is taking way too much abuse for this. I mean, and we're not ones to defend WWE commentary on this podcast. If you want to go back in the archives and hear some of the things we've said about WWE commentary, feel free. We are not fans of commentary in general, except when Kevin Owens does it. I like that. But anyway, Neville is in the ring. He's wrestling. They're making reference to his catchphrase, the man that gravity forgot. And they're talking about high-flying King of the Rings. And JBL suggests that Owen Hart could have been considered that. And without thinking, Booker T's his first answer was, well, he can't defy gravity like Adrian Neville. And the internet went nuts about this. I think, like, let's think about this logically. Do you think Booker T had the time to even think about what that line meant?
No.
Really don't.
It's completely blown out of proportion. Booker T meant no harm by it. If I was going in my head about, like, high-flying King of the Ring winners, you know what? Owen Hart would probably be one of the first ones. And then when you talk about gravity and whatnot, you're watching a match with Neville. You know, the comparison is there. You're not thinking about how Owen Hart unfortunately died. So,
yeah, I mean, you're not thinking about an incident that happened 15 years ago.
Yeah.
That happened. It just wasn't there. And, I mean, there's lots of things to pick on about WWE commentary. This wasn't one of them. And I felt bad for Booker T, because Booker T, of course, has had these moments where he said lines and learned to live to regret them. For instance, calling Hulk Hogan the N-word was there, and now I guess this one will get attached to Booker T as well. But, I mean, I think people are being way too hard on a guy who really doesn't deserve it.
That's the internet.
Yeah, I respect wrestling fans, and I a lot of the opinions that I see on the internet are opinions that I agree with, quite frankly. But the odd time, the internet goes a little too far. This is one of those cases where, come on. Like, really?
Exactly.
And speaking of really, The Miz is now gone. That's so exciting to me.
Yep.
He has gone off to do a movie. He did an interview with Sam Roberts that was just... He is the most annoying person. He really is. Like, get this. On this interview, he basically predicts the demise of Damian Sandow, and he says it's just like anybody else that has been with me and then leaves me, and he referenced Alex Riley as the example.
Dick move.
Damian Sandow is not Alex Riley.
He's not, no.
I'll just say that. And The Miz is a guy who's in movies that lose money and go straight to DVD. And that's the bottom line of that. And the only two actual jokes that Mick Foley told on his cheap pop show were jokes to bury The Miz, so...
Perfect.
It works. Anyway, that was our show for this week. We hope you enjoyed it. Obviously, Chris Walder mentioned he has a new job and all that. we're going to see how that all works for us in terms of this podcast. We may at some point be moving around. We're going to stay where we are for now. But we want Walder to remain part of the show. So we're going to make accommodations to make sure that happens. And when we know, we'll let you know. And for now, it's Fridays, sometimes Saturdays. Over the weekend, come check us out. It'll be up there on the site, and you can hear all that was in the week of pro wrestling from myself and the Swiss millennial, now basketball god at the Score, Chris Walder.
You can't get rid of me that easy, Condo on the Moon. I'll be back.
Well, we can, actually, but I like you.